Welcome to the Spirit of Work solo episodes of the Culture and Leadership Connections podcast. If you long to see happier and more humane workplaces and want to reflect on how that could happen, you are in the right place. These monthly solo episodes are based on my book, The Spirit of Work, Timeless Wisdom, Current Realities. The book was written from three complementary sources of knowledge. 1, the sacred writings of the world's spiritual traditions. 2, scientific developments on human behavior and well-being in the workplace. And 3, insightful experiences from business, my clients, and my own work. In each episode, I elaborate on one of the ideas from the book and ask questions to help us all think more holistically about work. Join me as we combine the wisdom of the past and the reading of our current realities to build the future of work. And now for today's episode. Welcome to episode 5 of the Spirit of Work solo podcasts. In this episode, I want to talk about the first chapter in my book, Understanding the Relationship of the Nature and Qualities of the Soul for Work and Working. I will be exploring some of the qualities of the soul from various sacred traditions and showing how these qualities matter for good work, quite literally. But first, a little reflection on why looking at sacred writings and traditions matters. There are many ways to understand the world, and those are sometimes called ways of knowing. Accessing any one of them opens up a door of understanding. But when you see from the perspective of the sacred overview, you get the whole layout of the building and even the context in which the building sits. Knowing about any one topic is like seeing one star in the sky. Seeing that star in the context of the whole solar system allows you to even imagine the universe. So understanding the sacred traditions and their writings and teachings on how we should be with each other at work and how we should be with each other, period, can be very informative. And that's what I wanted to explore in this episode today. Throughout all time, humanity has lived within the context of religious and spiritual knowledge, usually as a basis for how civilization works and how it functions, and the rules of behavior. All of that has been within a religious and spiritual context. And it's only in recent times, say the last 100 years or so, more or less corresponding with the Industrial Revolution, which is older than that a bit, that humanity questions the existence of God and the validity of the messages sent by the Creator through teachers throughout time to different cultures around the world. And those messages have been provided for our safety and well-being and to give us what we need in order to realize our full potential as a truly human race. But we haven't really listened to them. It's been 6,000 years of human existence, and now we're dismissing them outright. So I'd like to bring us back to that idea that the sacred teachings are foundational and also provide us with insights that can lead us to understanding of mysteries we might otherwise have completely missed. 6,000 years of human existence cannot be so easily dismissed, and let's talk about the soul. I'm going to do some quotes from the book, so you might hear some paper rustling in the background. I'll try to keep it down. Encyclopedia Britannica writes on page 22 in my book, "Soul, in religion and philosophy, the immaterial aspect or essence of a human being, that which confers individuality and humanity, often considered to be synonymous with the mind and the self. In theology, the soul is further defined as that part of the individual which partakes of divinity and is often considered to survive the death of the body." So that would be the soul, and all of the world religions have something to say about the soul. Probably the most comprehensive and thorough are the writings of the Baha'i Faith, which talk about the soul in ways that are much deeper than what we hear from other traditions, probably because it's only 200 years old. And so it has things to offer to the modern view that help us to understand things from a perspective we might not otherwise know. So here's a little bit of one of the quotes from the Baha'i writings about the soul. "The soul is not a combination of elements. It is not composed of many atoms. It is of one indivisible substance and eternal. It is entirely out of the order of the physical creation, and it is immortal." And it also talks about the soul, like the intellect, is an abstraction. Intelligence does not partake of the quality of space, although it's related to the brain. The intellect resides there, but not materially. Search in the brain and you will not find the intellect. In the same way, though the soul is the resident of the body, it is not to be found in the body. Pretty interesting, hey? I'm going to go on to some of the other things that I wanted to tell you about the soul and work. On page 21, there's a list of very short and simple view of how different religions have spoken about the soul. And so the ancient Egyptians talked about the soul as being buried in a stele, meaning the container in which the body had been buried, and that the soul was inside this container, meaning the body. So that's the first reference that we know of from writing. And Christianity doesn't explain the soul in the New Testament, but St. Augustine wrote about the nature of the soul as having three parts: the body, or somatics, the soul, or the psyche, and the spirit, or the pneuma. And in Hinduism, there is the concept of Atman, which is the essence of life that exists in all living things, and in human beings is an opportunity to achieve transcendence. Islam and Jainism state that the soul exists before its association with the body and must pass through the physical life to overcome bondage and become liberated from the constraints of self and desire. In both Judaism and Christianity, the soul is considered to be alive if it follows the commandments of God and dead if it does not. And in many North American indigenous spiritualities, there are references to life as emanating from the Great Spirit, who imbues all living things with the spirit of life. So you can see that there has been a concept of the soul in many cultures, and this is just a sampling, and many traditions over time. And it's a very interesting thing to look at it and to consider how this could affect life. The thing that matters to me the most about this is that we have a constant dilemma throughout the literature about work and working. And that is that, what do? Struggle to survive, or you look for meaning, as if it were an either-or situation. So struggling for existence is one of the conditions that we want to overcome so that we can be more comfortable and not be struggling all the time. And when work is only a struggle for existence, it feels pretty hopeless. And if work is only a search for purpose and meaning, then perhaps we don't develop the necessary practical tools that we need to be able to live more comfortably and deal with the struggle of existence side. So I propose that work that is meaningful because it is related to the qualities and characteristics of the soul combines the struggle for existence with purpose into something that is beyond both of those things and is not a polarization. We would then have meaningful work. It doesn't mean we won't struggle in that work, but it will not be entirely struggle, nor will it be entirely meaningful and purposeful and enjoyable all the time. So that's where I'm starting. And if we're animated by a life force that's called the soul, then we can reconcile these two seemingly opposing differences. I'm just going to provide you a sampling of what some of the teachings and quotes from the world religions say about how we can work together more effectively. So that goes from page 23 to page 32 in my book, The Spirit of Work, Timeless Wisdom, Current Realities. This is something I really liked that Hinduism had to say about the soul. There are these seven qualities and eight powers of the soul. And the qualities, interestingly, are the same across all the sacred traditions. Purity seems to be the most important and first quality of the soul. So to have clean thoughts and clear and pure intent and pure desire is necessary to move forward in the love of the Creator. Although purity seems to be a most important piece, which is one of the qualities of the soul. And peace, as in feeling peaceful and sense of well-being, is something that is also a quality of the soul. Love, joy, bliss, and knowledge. So if you think about all those things in relation to work, how often do you experience bliss at work, love, or joy? If you don't experience those things, that means that we're missing some of the qualities of the soul. Now, I love the eight powers of the soul that Hinduism talks about. And one that I really like is the power to accommodate. That's the first one, meaning that you can accommodate and be flexible when other people are working with you. And it doesn't have to be your way or the highway. One of the qualities of the soul is the ability to be able to accommodate, to be flexible, to consider the other person, and then to take some kind of an action based on both your needs and the other person's needs. Another one that I really like is the power to pack up. And I didn't really know what that meant until I read more about it, but it's the ability to bring things to closure and move on. Now, if you think about people who are still harping about something that happened to them 10 years ago in the workplace, they haven't packed up, right? There's a quality of the soul that needs to be practiced. How do I bring closure to this story and move on, right? There's more, but you're going to have to read that on pages 24 to 26. It's really good. And in Christianity, there's a lot of essential characteristics which are summarized by a number of Christian writers. The idea that the soul comes from and returns to God, it animates the body while in the physical realm and is active both wakeful and in sleep states, that is also a concept that's in all different sacred traditions, that the soul is active in sleep states and that dreams have a significant piece of understanding for us to work with. And in cultures where dreaming is part of the natural way of doing things and the natural order of things, we could probably learn a lot, because if we aren't dreaming, we're missing out on that piece of the soul. And the soul has the capacity to have and to learn from experiences, and is subject to some kind of judgment upon death, depending on how individuals lived and whether they were true to their faith and if they lived by spiritual principles. So that's Christianity. Now, in Islam, I found something totally interesting that grabbed my attention, because it was by two Muslim psychologists, Zohair Abdulrahman and Nazir Khan, and they developed A Souls Assorted, an Islamic Theory of Spiritual Personality, which I thought was absolutely brilliant. And they differentiate between personality and moral character, stating that personality has to do with a natural default, but moral character has to be developed in conjunction with religious teachings so that we can perfect our virtues, which I'll come back to later. There are ways that you can do that, and that is by overcoming vice, which I'll also talk to you in a bit, and practicing spiritual disciplines like prayer and meditation and fasting, and to do altruistic actions like charity and service to humanity. So they focus on these two broad spiritual orientations, and then they divide them into four types of personalities, all based on Islamic teachings, which is absolutely brilliant. So the first large orientation is experience versus judgment. Some people tend to be more on the experience side and other more on the judging side. And then the second one is action versus restraint. So you have people who tend to be more action-oriented and those who tend to be more reflective and restraint-oriented. And so then out of that, they develop four spiritual personality archetypes. And they're called the hand of power, the voice of justice, the heart of inspiration, and the eye of vigilance. And when you look at all of these, they provide you with a way to understand people from both personality and a spiritual and moral perspective in a personality assessment, which they offer. And I would love to take, if I could find a way to take it, I would love to take that assessment and see how I score, because it sounds very interesting, as all personality inventories are. But this one has particular interest because it deals with both moral and spiritual aspects of personality. Cool, eh? Now, I think what I really liked about this particular personality, moral, spiritual inventory is that the whole approach is balance. You need to look at where you are in the continuum of each of these different four archetypes, and then see what you need to do to maintain balance in situations where you might find it more difficult, and how you can bring balance to other people's lives in the things that you find easier to do. So it's a really lovely approach to personality that I've never seen anywhere else. Now, how can we apply this to the workplace a little bit more practically? Well, I think you can consider it from the perspective of bullying. And in the next episode, I'll tell you more about virtues and vice. But from the perspective of workplace bullying, if you're bringing your soul to work, which is the premise of the whole book, bring your soul to work, then you can learn to do that more effectively by paying attention to the teachings of the sacred traditions. So from Hinduism, if I am being bullied at work, I have tools to respond, either from the perpetrator or from the victim point of view, because I can use the powers of the soul and I can use the characteristics of the soul to help me understand the situation better and to act according to what would be the highest moral principle in the situation, even in reflecting on it and then taking a next step. So that would be how I would use Hinduism for that. If we take the indigenous, we are all related, all my relations concept of spirituality, then the mere thought of willfully harming another living thing becomes completely abhorrent, because as you harm others, you harm yourself and you create a kind of a hole in the ecosystem that interferes with the web of life and interconnected relationality that is sacred and which we need to respect. So having a discussion with children or in the workplace about how respect is part of this ecosystem of relationality and the sacred web of life, and that would make us think more carefully about the things that we say and do. Then if we think about the Christian approach, think about the ripple effect of actions building up in your life now and then applying to you at the day of judgment, at the end of your life. Well, how much have you contributed to making your workplace a better place and a happier place to be? And how much have you contributed to making it an unpleasant, uncomfortable, and mean-spirited place? So think that your actions are cumulative and they're leading to a kind of a report card at the end of your life. And that comes from Christianity. And then if you think about the Islamic personality and moral inventory, I think what stands out for me with that is to be grateful for the diversity of approaches that others provide for me to consider, and that the sum of our actions results in something that we are not unconscious of, but that we can consciously choose to affect by making moral decisions. I think I can look for the good in myself and others and learn to appreciate individual differences because of the contributions they make to the whole when I look at this aspect of personality and moral and spiritual personality from the Islamic perspective. And from the Baha'i perspective, you are trying to do some good to every soul whose path you cross. That means that you're approaching your other colleagues with a spirit of goodwill and a desire to do some good for them. All of these would make for really wonderful workplaces, don't you think? So this doesn't give you exactly an approach to deal specifically with an answer for each bullying situation, but it does give you a lens through which you could approach it. And I'm going to end with a fact that I have used when I've been intervening in many workplace situations. So I'm called to work with a number of very dysfunctional, toxic workplaces. And as soon as I address a spiritual principle or bring to their attention the fact that respect is based on the web of the entire universe and particularly of everything we're related to, and how each of our actions is a cumulative effect, and how that effect is kind of a report card on our lives, people really think about it. And then you ask them what gives you purpose and meaning in your life, what helps you to get beyond the struggle for existence. And you ask people to share stories with each other about their work experiences. And you will find that a lot of humanity emerges. Also, a lot of appreciation for each other emerges that can be sustained more easily than if people are just looking for mistakes to correct. I hope that this was interesting for you. I really enjoyed doing this part of the research of the book, and it took a ridiculously large amount of time because I had so many notes and so many quotes to put in, and I had to choose so that this chapter wasn't the whole book. And I learned so much from it, and I want to go back and study it more. But even just reading the few pages in chapter 2 in The Spirit of Work will give you some insights that I'm sure you will find most useful in your work life. So, what's your take? How can understanding the soul and its characteristics from different sacred traditions help you to understand work differently? I would love to hear from you. And you can leave your thoughts by going to shiftworkplace.com/podcast. That's shiftworkplace.com/podcast. Scroll to the box in the middle where it says, I'd love to hear from you. And you can leave either a voice message or a text message. And I'd be very happy to feature that on the podcast as soon as I get enough that I can choose. So if you're finding these episodes insightful, you can purchase the book, The Spirit of Work, Timeless Wisdom, Current Realities, online on Amazon and on Barnes & Noble, or directly from our website, which is shiftworkplace.com, and just go to buy the book and you'll be able to get it. Feel free to send me your own insights and stories, and you can send them either to my email, marie@shiftworkplace.com, or you can put them inside the voice message inside our podcast part of the website of Shift Workplace. So I'd love to hear from you. And may culture and leadership connections continue to guide and inspire your day. Newsflash! Listeners can now interact with Culture and Leadership Connections podcast by leaving a voice or text message on Fan List. It is a fun and quick way to let me know what you liked, ask a question, or leave a suggestion. I will feature some of the voice messages on upcoming episodes. You might be surprised to hear your own voice, but only if you leave a message, of course. So to leave your personal message or your question, go to shiftworkplace.com/podcast and click on the fan list link to leave it. I can hardly wait to hear what you have to say.